It's your life. Live it. Live on AWR SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
So for us to ask a pastor and pastor or doctor, Pastor Watson Brady, standing by to give us some perspective on our question for today. And he's here for the week to enlighten us and educate us. And that's what we're doing right now. Our question for today: what is the Christian perspective on extraterrestrial life? You know, when we speak of extraterrestrial, we tend to imagine aliens and movies about aliens. But I'm sure we have a broader understanding of extraterrestrial, and that's why it's here. To give us some perspective, Dr. Mbiriri, good afternoon to you. Welcome back, and thank you very much for answering our questions this week.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me, and greetings to all the AWR listeners out there. It's good to be here.
Thank you very much, Doc. So, what is the Christian perspective on extraterrestrial life?
I wish there was a single perspective. There are different perspectives, as on many other things, with regards to extraterrestrial life. So, it's quite a long word, but simply means we're talking about the idea that life exists beyond Earth, potentially on other planets or moons or elsewhere in the universe. So this could range, you know, from simple microorganisms to advanced intelligent, you know, civilizations,
right,
or societies. You know, so extraterrestrial, I'm trying to define the term that we're working with
right,
this afternoon. Yes. So this is a subject that has, you know, intrigued, you know, scientists, philosophers, and theologians. In this case, we are talking particularly interested in Christian perspectives on this. And it remains, you know, a very important subject for many people. Just last week, was it? SpaceX sent out a rocket that's going out, or a space probe that's going out to one of the moons on one of the planets. And it's a five-year trip, because they are going to look for extraterrestrial life. And a lot of money has been expended in history on this. So what Christians believe on this, or the Christian beliefs, are determined really by what people understand about Bible teachings regarding creation and God's relationship with the universe. And so when it comes to this, you know, narrowing it down, we find that, for example, the Roman Catholic Church has historically been open to the idea of extraterrestrial life, quite open to that. And we can also talk of Seventh-day Adventists who have been open to this, especially when we consider the writings of Ellen White, one of the co-founders of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, particularly in the book Early Writings, where she describes actually seeing in vision extraterrestrial life on other planets. That is Early Writings, page number 39. So there's that possibility. Many Christians are open to this, but the Bible itself does not directly address or speak about extraterrestrial life, other than when it's talking about heaven, where it repeatedly mentions of life outside of Earth. And elsewhere, it only makes very faint allusions, I could say, you know, to extraterrestrial life.
So let's get into that, particularly in the context of the scriptures. When we speak of extraterrestrial, are we only speaking of heavenly beings in the control of Yahweh? Or are we referring to heavenly beings also that were under the control of Yahweh prior to the great controversy in heaven? Or do we even imagine, as E.G. White suggests, that they are unfallen beings? And perhaps you could touch on that as well. What exactly are we talking about here? Are we talking about human beings that are living in planet Mars or in some other planet? Or animals and human beings, or a mixture of the two? A lot of ideas are coming, but now do just decipher for us, what exactly does the Bible give us reasonable cause to believe exists extraterrestrially?
So when we're talking about extraterrestrial life, it's almost, the thinking that is there is that more chances are higher that extraterrestrial life would be found probably outside of the solar system. And for life, as we know and we understand it, it takes a certain type of star, like our star, the sun, which is a main sequence star. It takes a certain type of star to support life, as we know, as we understand it, and so on. And there are many, many such stars that have been found elsewhere, and with the probable cause that there's water also on planets that are revolving around those stars, which are suitable for life. But coming to the Bible, Job chapter 1, verse number 6, it says, "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them." The Bible talks about an order of beings called the sons of God. It doesn't really elaborate on this, but elsewhere, when we look in the book of Luke, when the genealogy of Jesus is given, it goes all the way back to Adam, and Adam is described as the son of God. And trying to marry those two texts together, people have come up with an understanding that this order of beings described as sons of God in the book of Job should be an order of beings that is the same as human beings. But in this particular instance, these are beings coming from other worlds, other planets, just like Adam was meant. If Adam had not fallen, he would probably have been a delegate in this meeting, the Earth's delegate or representative in this meeting. So that's just about as far as the Bible goes with regards to, you know, extraterrestrial life, other than when it describes celestial life, that is heavenly life. So that's what I can say. I'm not aware of anything that goes beyond that. So the Bible is geocentric. It's focused on the Earth.
Right.
And it doesn't give us a lot more outside of the Earth, leaving a lot of room for a lot of speculation other than what we may find in the writings of Ellen White, the early writings.
Right, right. So do aliens exist in scriptures?
We don't have any reference to aliens. We have reference to angels as being in existence. But there are many people who are, you know, over time, we've reported sighting aliens or UFOs, unidentified flying objects. They seem to have been documented by quite a number of highly respected people in terms of, in the scientific community.
Right.
And in NASA, and particularly in the United States, there seems to be quite a lot of that recording or documentation that has happened. But the Bible doesn't give us, you know, any basis on which to really anchor a faith or a belief in UFOs or
aliens. Come with me to the book of Colossians, chapter 1, verse 16. Chapter 1, verse 16.
Yes.
"For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him."
Mm-hmm.
Some have used that text to suggest that the created beings we see here on earth, some are in heaven. If there are animals here on earth, there are animals in heaven. If there are people on earth, there are people in heaven. What do you make of that interpretation? And here, it's referring to, very clinically, "For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him." What do you make of that?
Well, it's simply telling me that what I understand is that the full scope of all that is in existence was created by God. whether we're talking terrestrial, that means earthly things, or celestial, or heavenly things. But the very idea of this mirroring of reality, that the reality on earth is mirror images or replicas in heaven, or the heavenly is replicated in what we see on earth, it really comes from Greek philosophy. It should be Plato or Socrates. It should be Plato. I'm not very sure who came up with that. Thesis. It's not necessarily coming from the Bible. It's actually coming from Greek philosophy. His idea was that whatever we see on earth are shadows of actual realities of what is in heaven. Whatever is here is an imperfect representation of the ultimate realities that are out there in the celestial spheres, but dimly reflected in what we see and experience in the celestial sphere, which means right here on earth.
Then there is the very unique Adventist doctrine of the sanctuary in heaven, which we are adamant, as the Platonic theory you're just positing right now, that it is a mirror of what is in heaven. The heavenly sanctuary is mirrored on earth. And if we still contend that the sanctuary in heaven was or pre-existed the earthly sanctuary, then it stands to reason that the animals that we sacrifice on earth pre-exist, or there are those that pre-existed those that we are sacrificing on earth. There are those who are in heaven that were sacrificed in heaven.
Well, it may not follow like that because
yes,
it will not follow like that because now we are going into the issue of type and anti-type. It's typological interpretation now,
right?
That applies in that. And so, for example, when John says, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world," Jesus was not a lamb in the same sense that we have lambs running around in our paddocks,
right?
And so on. So those are, what we have in the earthly sanctuary is faintly pointing to greater realities, realities that are greater than itself. So, yeah, it doesn't really correspond.
Doctor? Which came first, the earthly sanctuary or the heavenly sanctuary?
Well, the Bible does not necessarily give us a chronological sequencing. But considering that, if I were to take it literally, when God says the pattern that I've shown you on the mountain, you shall make a tabernacle like that. It's assuming that the one that Moses was copying from was already in existence prior to the one that he was going to make out of what he was looking at. And the fact that the Bible also tells us in a number of texts that Jesus is the Lamb of God slain from the foundation of the world.
Right.
That God had anticipated the plan of salvation or redemption. So, yeah, that would give us credence to believe that the heavenly predated the earthly.
So, though the animals we know have to be slaughtered in a sanctuary before there was a Christ, where would those animals come from in the heavenly sanctuary?
I don't believe there's any animal being slaughtered in the heavenly sanctuary.
Okay.
Because, yes, it's a place where death does not exist.
Yes.
Yes. So it would be incongruent to have death in that space. But these earthly animals or sacrificial animals, just like I've referred to John 1:29, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." The earthly lambs were pointing to the actual lamb in the form of Jesus, who was going to be slain, and he was slain at Calvary, thus fulfilling what was anticipated in the typical system that was established under the Levitical order. So that is the correspondence. So there's no need, there's no room, there's no necessity for actual sacrifices taking place in heaven.
So there are no compartments in heaven. There are no bowls to collect blood. There are no horns to sprinkle the blood on. So basically, the idea that this is a mirror image of what is happening in heaven, or at least these... The sanctuary is also in heaven, is not entirely correct, because if there are no animals to be slaughtered, there's no bowl that needs to be fashioned out of gold to collect animal blood. There are no horns, as there's no Ark of the Tabernacle that is going to be sprinkling the blood on. There's no sprinkling of blood or any of the things that we are told are supposed to be. There's no darkness in heaven, therefore no need for lampstands. Basically, all of these things that we are claiming are a mirror of what is in heaven, it's not there, because there's really...
Okay. That's interesting. It has become a more specific, interaction of extraterrestrial. Like now, in this case, we're now discussing celestial.
Okay.
Yeah, extraterrestrial.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So that's a difference there. It's no longer extraterrestrial. It's now celestial, I guess, that we're discussing. But the book of Hebrews is all about Jesus, being better in everything, in terms of being a better sacrifice, being a better priest, being a better high priest, and entering into the heavens to administer the merits of his own blood, which was shed right here on earth, and, administering that before the throne of God, because the actual throne of God is depicted or communicated to us as being situated in heaven. And so he ministers the merits of his blood, just like in the same sense that the priests would ordinarily sprinkle on the veil that was before the most holy place. And the book of Hebrews tells us about Jesus going behind the veil in that sense. But you think there was no room or need for actual lambs to be slaughtered in heaven, because there's no death in that space. That's why Jesus' death occurred right here on earth. But then he ascended into heaven on the basis and power of a sacrifices that were superior to earthly sacrifices. So there's no need to have inferior sacrifices in heaven. Then we have Christ, the superior sacrifice on earth, because he doesn't enter into the heavenly sanctuary on the power of the blood of goats and bulls, but on his own blood, which is superior.
One last point there, Doctor, and then I'll let you go. Then let's go to what E.G. White is suggesting to be unfallen worlds. What exactly does that mean? Does it not speak to extraterrestrial life?
It does speak directly to extraterrestrial life. As I've said, when you consider early writings, page 39, the Lord has given me a view of other worlds. Wings were given me, and an angel attended me from the city to a place that was bright and glorious. The grass of the place was living green, and the birds were there warbled a sweet song. The inhabitants of the place were all sizes. They were noble, majestic, and lovely. They bore the express image of Jesus, and their countenances beamed with holy joy, expressive of the freedom and holiness and happiness of the place. Clearly, this is extraterrestrial life that is being described here in terms of grass, in terms of plants and trees, and in terms of animals and birds, that is, and then humans, okay? Humans as well. So this is clearly extraterrestrial life.
So we're saying there are people that are living in other planets?
Yes, according to this, what we call the pen of inspiration, yes. And this is not incompatible with God's the fact of God's creatorship, such as maybe you also referenced in the book of Colossians.
Are you still there, Doctor? Okay, that just died there. All right, we're going to end it there since our time is up. Oh, we appreciate Dr. Mbiriri. Hey, Nkosiya. I don't know if you are as I am lapping it up, enjoying every moment of this lecture. But our line to him just died like that. I suppose that's how we're going to end our conversation with him. If you, like me, would like to have more of these conversations with Dr. Mbiriri, tune in at 12:30 every day from now up until Friday. We started yesterday, and he capably helps us understand these things. Beautiful indeed.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.